It's the Star Wars Report podcast. I'm so excited about tonight's show. We've got Arish Chernovice from Del Rey. We're going to be talking about Star Wars Rebels. But first, it's the third theatrical trailer to The Force Awakens, and it's coming up right now. Let's do it.
Falcon flight with destiny.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen, it is the Star Wars Report podcast. Welcome, welcome, come in, come in. Come one, come all. I'm Riley Blanton, your host for this evening, morning or afternoon, please delete as appropriate. I'm joined, as always, by my good friend and co-host of the podcast right here. It's one Mark Herleman. Let's do it.
It's me. Hey, come on, come on. Let's have a ball. It's time for the Star Wars Report. Good to be here. Glad to be here. Happy to have our guest with us today.
Absolutely. We have something that's probably been a long time coming, Mark. A long time. A long time coming because there was once upon a time, 4 years, 5 years ago, where you should have been on a podcast with this gentleman, and we're finally making true justice happen.
True justice. If you're sick, true justice.
I've missed quite a few
opportunities on another podcast where we'd have guests come on and I'd have audio issues and get to just listen in the background going, oh. I was so close.
Oh, well, we're solving it tonight. We're bringing him on. He's a good friend of mine through the world of fandom podcasting and just that galaxy that brings us all together. It's Arish Chernovice. Welcome to the program, sir.
Hey, guys. What's going on?
Ah, not too much, man. I'm so excited to have you on the Star Wars Report podcast. This is the first time, is it not?
Yeah, yep.
How has this not happened before? I'm a terrible human being.
Because, you know, Glosson is stealing all my time.
I was going to say, yeah, he's hogging. let's all blame it on...
He's trying to get exclusive rights to me.
It's not his way, man. You know, I'm sure a lot of our listeners are familiar with you, Arish, especially probably mostly through Steve Glosson. Let's all be honest. It's not Del Rey. Forget about that. It's the Gulliverse, because you and Steve do an amazing monthly segment on Geek Out Loud. It's Past the Corn, where you talk about movies. But that's kind of your escape from the world of Star Wars. We're pinning you back into the Star Wars side of things here. But also, you work through Del Rey as well. So, but none of that, all that pales into comparison of your genuine fandom. And I've witnessed it in person at Star Wars Weekend and Celebration. So just speaking personally, Arish is a super cool guy, and I couldn't be more happy to have you on the show, man.
Well, thank you, sir. Thank you very much.
I'm channeling some Elvis there, I see. Thank you very much. Thank you. Also, Arish is going to be our token old person. Sorry, Arish.
It's good. You know what? I wear that badge proudly.
Good.
I am the old man here. I'm 45. I saw Star Wars when it first came out when I was 7 years old, and it has been and the Denver Broncos, both the same year for me when I was seven. They both have been like the two loves of my life.
Nice.
That's awesome, man. I've never really heard that side of your Star Wars story. Scott's in the chat tonight, so I can rib a little bit. So what is your Star Wars story?
Well, I mean, seven-year-old kid who, you know, it's really – I'd seen other movies in the theater before, but Star Wars is the first experience that I remember in a theater. Yeah. You know, I remember sitting there, and this was back when they had balconies in theaters, sitting up in the balcony with my father and just being freaked out like beyond all imagination when Darth Vader came walking through that blast door for the first time. You know, we were living in Denver, which is where the Broncos side of it comes into. Uh, So, you know, I think we saw it around August. We didn't see it right away. I remember being one of the last kids on my street to see it. But we finally got around to seeing it at like the end of the summer. I just remember like I was wearing like a hoodie sweatshirt or something and just pulling that thing like over my face. So I'm just peeking out of like the corner of like one of my eyes. I was so freaked out by Vader. I had no idea what this big, huge, menacing black robot beast thing was walking through the door. And then, you know, just like every kid who saw that movie that summer, I was just enthralled with it. You know, had to get all the action figures. It was all encompassing. Everything was Star Wars after that, through all the way through Return of the Jedi. Jedi was the first movie that I was allowed to go see on my own.
Nice.
Without my parents.
Nice.
My friends and I, opening weekend, it's the first movie that I stood in line for too. We were at the theater like right away, even though we weren't seeing it until like the late afternoon show. But I can just remember being in the lobby of the theater, and I mean, we pretty much knew the whole story because we had read the storybook. We had the magazines. And this is back before the internet, so just through print articles and newspaper articles, magazines and stuff, wow. We kind of pieced it all together, like during lunch in our school and stuff, and just nerding out with each other. But I can just remember being in that movie theater lobby, like waiting for our turn, waiting for our showing to start. But every time somebody would come out of the theater to like go to the concession or use the bathroom, like the door would be open for a minute. So you'd get that little snippet. You would hear like the speeder bike or an explosion or a little bit of dialogue. And it just would make us even more pumped up to see it. And so it's just, you know, it's stuck with me all these years, all these decades. And, you know, my dream growing up was to grow up to make the next Star Wars movie. I went to film school. I wanted to make movies. And then just by some weird, I like to say that the Force has guided my career. Instead, I'm making the next Star Wars books. So I feel very blessed.
That's not too bad of a settlement, if you ask me. That's pretty awesome.
That's my Star Wars story.
Well, and of course, you need to, in all seriousness, we all look forward to the time when you make an appearance on Scott Rifen's actual Star Wars story to tell it at length. But that is, you know, it is something that we talked about it because I recently appeared on my Star Wars stories, and there is just a marked difference that I have to just come to terms with the fact that I won't ever get Star Wars on that level. It's just, and it, part of me is always kind of sad about it. I'm not going to lie, not to be too melancholy here at the beginning of the show, but it is interesting because I'll never know what it was like to not be excited to find out who Darth Maul was. That's like my version of Star Wars. To live in a world where the Pepsi cans with the characters were everywhere, but I had not, you know, I had no idea what any of it meant. It's just a very different world, but you know, in all of our different ways, it never gets old. And you know, here we are, a mere 9 weeks, gentlemen, less than 9 weeks now, from the release of The Force Awakens.
Yeah,
it all starts to become, you know, starts to become real. But I'll tell you what. Speaking of stuff that's beginning to come real, let's jump straight into our news segment.
We have something to report.
Confessor, I have good news.
Data brought to us by the Bothan spies.
We can send a clear transmission.
There it is. Listen.
We can send a clear transmission because we're talking about the next Star Wars trailer. That's right.
But it's out already?
That's right. Sorry, the show's canceled. Let's all take a look. Around the time a lot of folks will be hearing this, the trailer will be out. Because this will be released the day the trailer's released, although it looks like the trailer will be coming out Monday evening. We're recording this on Saturday evening, but I'm gonna kind of there's a Making Star Wars piece that has kind of honed in on all of the various rumors and then confirmed and then partially confirmed, then fully confirmed that have been swirling really in the last 48 hours as we record this. It has been insane, but it is now all but officially confirmed, and I mean all but officially confirmed, that the next Force Awakens trailer will be released Monday the 19th. Making Star Wars is expecting the official announcement about 12 hours or so before the airing. So they'll probably be announcing this kind of stuff either Sunday night or Monday morning early for the official trailer. A lot of people are thinking that it's going to appear at Monday Night Football. That's when it's going to make its network TV debut. But as to when exactly it appears online remains to be seen exactly. But this is what people are pumped for. This is what's exciting, folks, right now. So basically we'll get – here's the rundown of what the sites are reporting. We're going to get the official one sheet Sunday morning. That's tomorrow morning, guys. I'm going to try to keep my composure. And then the trailer will debut Monday night at around 8 is what people are saying. And then tickets go on sale. Pre-order tickets go on sale about 8:30, very soon after that, which is a very interesting play. And, of course, Star Wars, one of the first institutions with The Phantom Menace to usher in the era of pre-ordering your movie tickets. But I've got to say, before we even start this, talk about the specifics, Arish, I've actually something I've heard, and Mark, you threw it in the show notes as well. It's an interesting question. Do we need a third trailer? Do you think this is something that's necessary for the marketing of the film?
Personally, for the core Star Wars audience, no, we don't need anything else. Just put the tickets on sale. We're buying them, but. You know, it's funny. I was at New York Comic Con last weekend. I was talking to a teacher who had come up and was talking to us at the booth and explaining how she's teaching Joseph Campbell in her class right now. And she's got about 15 students in the class. And she was really shocked to learn that only one of those kids had ever seen a Star Wars movie. So believe it or not, there is a segment of the population out there that is kind of clueless to Star Wars. There is a segment out there that doesn't know that on December 18th, there is a new Star Wars movie coming. That doesn't know a year after that, we're getting a second new movie. And then 6 months after that, we're getting a third new movie. You know, there's so I think that for that segment who is – you know, not as aware of Star Wars as we are, that yes, they need a new trailer. So it's not like we're not going to want to see a new trailer. I mean, we'll watch anything that they show us.
Oh, you better believe it.
But what is amazing to me is the amount of discussion and hype and rumors and everything. And this has been going on like all week long.
Yeah.
About this trailer coming. And we're talking about a trailer, a 2-minute commercial for the movie. And all of this like hype and Twitter has been going crazy every time like some little thing. I mean, ESPN Caribbean. I didn't even know there was an ESPN Caribbean until I saw everybody retweeting the tweet today that was saying that there's going to be something Star Wars on Monday Night Football tomorrow night. So it's just amazing the amount of attention that this is getting, and also amazing how little Lucasfilm really has to do for this.
Yeah, that's so true, because the movie, just by virtue of the cultural institution of Star Wars, markets itself. The news of the fact that they're making a Star Wars movie, a new Star Wars movie, I think is already in most everyone's consciousness. Anyone who's going to go see a movie this Christmas season knows that there's a Star Wars movie coming. But I think that specifically what it's about, what it looks like, whether they're going to get online and pre-order those tickets, that's what this trailer is here to push. It's not to necessarily get more people to see it. I don't necessarily think that they need a trailer. I don't know that this third trailer is going to increase the amount of people that are seeing it. What it is going to increase is those pre-orders, the way that they're timing it. And just like, well, Arish, you come from the publishing world, pre-orders make a big deal.
Yeah, I'm really curious to see what the numbers for the pre-orders are going to look like.
Well, exactly, because like with a book, the more pre-orders you can get, the better chance you have of getting up that New York Times bestseller list, because they all count towards that first opening day.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt that The Force Awakens isn't going to make like $200+ million its first weekend out there. I think that the question is it going to hit 300 or above? You know, is it going to do something no movie has ever done before?
Hope so.
But I'm just really curious about, you know, because we're still talking like 2 months out. Like, are people going to be buying tickets to see a movie? And I know we all are.
Sure.
You know, and you know, the question with me and my family is, all right, we know we're going for the first showing that we can get, but then are we getting the next showing after that, or do we take a couple hours off, come home, recharge, go back, see it again? I mean, it's not a question of going to see it. It's a question of how many times are we going to see it in like the first 72 hours that it's out.
See, the 72-hour angle I wasn't going with, but I was like, all year long, however many movies I go see, I have to watch The Force Awakens at least that many times.
Yeah. I've already taken the 17th and the 18th off from work.
Well done.
You know, I put those days in a couple months ago with my boss. I'm like,
the entire office has, let's be honest.
I'm surprised they didn't give you guys that as a holiday, though.
Well...
I mean, it depends on how many people don't show up. There's going to be a lot of Wookiee hookie being played that day.
Well, for me, I got to truck out to Pennsylvania. I cannot, I have to see this movie with the family. I got to see it with my three nephews and my brother-in-law.
Which brings up the other question about this movie, you know, with talk of pre-order tickets, because of course, as we've talked about here on the show and alluded to, we're making plans. We're heading out to Austin, me and Bethany, to see it with Teresa.
Nice.
Internet personality, Brian Brushwood. I've extended an invitation to him. He's super excited. He'll be there. So we're going to be going to one of the opening screenings at the Alamo Draft House.
Oh, very cool.
And I'm super excited because I've always wanted to go. It's a good excuse to go out and visit Teresa.
Right.
But more importantly, I was thinking about it. And I've had some of these conversations off air, because as this gets more and more real and we start to make actual plans for what logistically, where we're going to see it, who we're going to see it with, it's actually a bigger decision than I thought about. And the more I thought about it, you know, there's going to be a huge, giant opening screening here at Atlantic Station in downtown Atlanta, where the 501st is gathering, and I could get with those guys. I know, well, you know, we could do like a big party and MC something, do giveaways, like some really hit the party up. But I think it probably says something about me personally or my personality. But I really just wanted to get together with friends and see it on the first screening.
See, I'm in that same boat, though. I mean, any place that's going to have anything big, I have to travel quite a ways to go to. I mean, even to see it in a good, real D theater, I got to go 37 miles away. So I just figured my first showing, I'm just going to do it here locally, watch it in 2D with my family, and then go and try to catch up with somebody that's doing something a little later, maybe, because every time I'm trying to do anything locally here, there's nothing going on. The fandom here is very low key where I'm at. So that was like, you know, I want to be where everyone's at, but at the same time, like, I want to be with my family. So it's conflicting for me, because like, my family doesn't want to drive all the way to some big place to be with a bunch of other Star Wars fans. They just want to go and watch the movie and then go home. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to be watching it a bunch, just so you guys know. And they're all okay with that. So my son, he's going to be coming with me, and we're definitely going to be hitting up the one over in Medford and stuff. But I'm still debating going up to Portland and doing something with some people up there, because in Oregon, that's the closest big city, a whole 300 something miles away. But, you know, that's some drive time, man.
But Arish, it does sound like for you, I agree with your decision. You know, seeing it with family and friends, if anything that Star Wars has taught me, it was my family that introduced it to me. So I think, you know, that's the best way to see it.
Well, and for me, my youngest nephew is going to be the same age I was when I saw Star Wars.
Oh, nice.
You know, so there's that connection there. And he's already like – my nephews, they had no choice. They were born with Star Wars in their blood. My brother-in-law, when he walked down the aisle marrying my sister, like, it was the throne room music playing as he walked down.
Nice.
Their bride and groom on the top of their cake was Han and Leia. But my nephews, they came in defenseless against the Star Wars DNA.
That's my kids too. They had no chance.
Yeah, and they all love it. They have embraced it. You know, the youngest one, he's going as Kylo Ren for Halloween. I'm amazed that he hasn't destroyed his costume already.
Are you wearing it around?
His latest thing is he's taping his action figures like to the wall above his bed. He's like that's how he's displaying them. Yeah, he's just all into Star Wars. I'm excited to see it with him, and then to talk to him about it afterwards, because yeah, I'm sure he's going to have like a million questions about this or about that and stuff. So
see, and that's the angle that's really exciting, because my kids are in the same boat. So there's no, when was your first time watching? It's going to be like, when was the first time you remember watching it? So like how they're coming up with these new things, like my littlest one, Jaina, right now, she's 3.5. Everything is Star Wars Rebels. It doesn't matter.
Oh, well, your kid didn't have a chance either. Her name is Jaina.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, all my kids have been hosed. We've got Taylor, Jade, Gavin, and now Jaina. And, you know, Gavin, he's such a fan. And Jaina idolizes everything he does. So she's actually become a bigger fan than he is. And it's funny to watch, because like she'll drop everything and come running in, and he'll come in and he'll check it out. He's like, oh yeah, I've seen that one 5 times, and he'll take off. She'll watch it and over again. She's like, Dad, Star Wars Rebels. Well, it's a Clone Wars, honey, but okay. You know, it doesn't matter what it is. It's Star Wars Rebels to her, because that's her era. You know, he was the Clone Wars. And it's amazing how, you know, Riley was one that came in on the prequels. You know, everybody's got that one Star Wars, you know, product that was their Star Wars, and it influenced everything. And to find out, you know, what it is they like and don't like based on these things, based on their reactions, because they're so different from ours. It's just amazing the differences and yet the similarities at the same time inside our fandom.
Right. Well, and I think that one of the brilliant things that's happened, and I don't know if this was a conscious decision or if it's just kind of, again, like, you know, the will of the Force or whatever, is that because Star Wars for decades has kind of become a generational thing, so many of us now who have kids, whether they're our own or our nieces or nephews or whatever, we get to experience it along with them. You know, and if you watch a show like Rebels, it's a show that the kids are enjoying as much as the adults are. And I know so many people who watch every episode. It's become like, you know, their weekly, okay, we're going to watch Rebels together now moment, where they sit down with their kids and they watch the episodes together. And there isn't a lot of other media out there that you can do that with these days. And I think it's magic.
Yeah, absolutely. Like Rebels is one of those things that is a sharing point for families. And that's so important. I think even more so than Clone Wars was. And I think, well, it's a good time to talk about it. So we'll be right back talking Star Wars Rebels. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. It's time to talk some Star Wars Rebels. I'd say it is just what we needed. Star Wars Rebels has returned to Disney XD with the episode "The Lost Commanders." The clones have returned. It's a reunion of the Clone Wars and Clone Wars characters on Star Wars Rebels, and it's a blast from the Clone Wars past. So let's talk about it. I'll start with you, Arish. Let's start from scratch. Ever since the collective community gasped in horror at the tragedy that was the loss of Clone Wars, and let's be honest, it was nothing short of that.
Right.
We've actually now we're into the second season of Star Wars Rebels. Where do you find yourself as a fan of Star Wars on television now, and what do you think of Rebels so far?
Oh, I absolutely love Rebels. I've loved it from the very beginning. I think it's I prefer it over Clone Wars. I think that in all the seasons of Clone Wars that they did, they took everything that they learned there and they put it into Rebels.
Absolutely.
And I think the show flows a lot better. That first season of Rebels just kept building and building and building to that amazing finale. And then we had that even more amazing, like, 1 hour movie during the summer. And now we come straight into the premiere episode of season two. It's just all working, and it's part of the bigger story of Star Wars too. You're starting to see connections to the movies, to the novels, to the comics, to the Clone Wars, as we did in season two premiere episode. Like, it's this bigger entity, and it's really, really starting to pay off.
That's so true. And it's funny because it's doing so by pulling out the key parts of the Clone Wars that did that. But the Clone Wars was very inconsistent about how much it wanted to tie into the greater Star Wars mythology. Whereas Rebels has been on point. And I think you're right, Arish. It does benefit from that time that Filoni and crew had with Clone Wars to pull out what is and isn't important. Because while the characters themselves are ones that we hadn't heard of until this show began, we've quickly found out how closely they do tie in to the build up to and the train that rolls ever on towards A New Hope. So let's talk about this episode again. This is season two, episode one proper. Of course, we had Siege of Lothal over the summer, but this is the first proper episode of season two. And clones return to the battlefield, and it's amazing. We basically have Ahsoka Tano, of course, Ashley Eckstein, the amazing Ashley Eckstein, is back, and she sends him off on a mission to get with this quote-unquote great military leader that she hasn't been able to contact. We find out very quickly why. And before I get right into the meat of the episode, just a friendly spoiler warning. If you haven't seen this week's episode, make sure that you probably jump out of this episode, rather, and probably join us next week. But otherwise, we'll continue on this episode. So Ahsoka presents the crew of the Ghost with, of all things, a tactical droid head that's going to be used to find a clone, which I didn't even realize that kind of scanning technology existed. Is it an organic scanning technology? Mark, what was your thoughts of the premise of the episode?
That was the one weird part, was when the tactical droid come out, because I was like, did he scan something, or did Rex have his number being broadcast? Because Sabine mentions, you know, he's dialing in on a signal or something like that, and it's Rex's number being repeated over and over again, which, so I kept going, okay, so that must mean that Rex has got the number being broadcast, but I couldn't figure out why Rex would do that, because from the interactions between Gregor, Wolf, and Rex, broadcasting where they were at didn't seem like something that they would be doing. So I was kind of, that was the weird part, because you did have Ahsoka talk about, well, he was last seen in like the Slimo system or something like that, and that's the system they go to, and then they started up that droid, and like it immediately dialed in on him. So it was kind of like, oh, well, that was convenient, but I don't know, there was like some exposition there that was missing. Like, was it Rex that was putting that out? Or, you know, what was it that the droid was dialing in on? I'm assuming it has to be Rex had it going out as like a reminder. Maybe this is kind of like a Cal Scarada thing where they've got a code out for any clones looking to come back or something.
Yeah, but we know that Ahsoka knew that it would work and that Ahsoka would be able to use its tactical droid's head to give as a tool for the crew to find Captain Rex. And she also knows that it's Captain Rex.
Yeah.
And tells Kanan very explicitly, if you find my friend, you must trust him. Which is, let's be honest, Ahsoka's come a long way since being that teenager in the TV show Clone Wars, that the Rod of the Hutt episodes. But Arish, I gotta ask you, do you think Ahsoka... Do you think Ahsoka maybe should have been a little bit more specific and warned Kanan?
No, because I don't think he would have gone.
You don't think? Do you think he's that bitter?
I do. I agree.
Well, wouldn't you be? He, you know, he was what, 13 years old when he watched the clones who were his friends, just instantly turn and kill his master, and then kill all the other Jedi that he knew. Wouldn't? I mean, he spent almost as much time in his life hiding from them after that as he did as a Jedi.
Yeah.
So I mean, they would be the last people that he would want to see. I just think that had she told him that you're going to see, I'm sending you to see, you know, Captain Rex and the clones, like he would not have gone. He would have,
yeah.
He would have thrown a, he would have, he, yeah, he just, the Kanan stubbornness that we saw in the episode, that would have happened right there on the bridge. And they just, they wouldn't have gone.
Well, but let's be honest, Kanan has some pretty good reasons to be too.
Exactly. And they killed all the Jedi.
Well, no, let's jump to present time. They kind of sold them all out to the Empire because in Kanan's mind, he used all the clones
well,
the same.
Well, the one did. Wolf did.
Exactly. Yeah. But Kanan sees them, you know, one clone is the same as another clone. If, you know, if Wolf betrays them, that's the same as the others betraying him.
Yeah, that's a rough one. I loved the interaction between Wolf and Kanan when Ezra mentions Rex's number and Rex says, that's my birth year. And, you know, Kanan comes up, he ignites the lightsaber, and he's like, you guys are clones. And Wolf, like, I like, you know, Wolf's like, the Jedi, they're here, they're out for revenge. And Rex is like, remember, they're not who betrayed us. And yeah. My oldest daughter was the one that picked up on that. And she's like, well, what does he mean? And I'm like, well, because Rex knows, you know, Rex knew what was going on. And he knew that the Jedi never betrayed them in the first place. And it was cool because it kind of gave you insight to Wolf, because Wolf always felt like the one clone. And this could be because he's one of Dave Filoni's babies in that regard, but he always felt like he was one of the clones that really stood next to Poe Kloon, kind of towed the line all the time. And so his paranoia seemed very in character to him. I mean, I was kind of surprised, honestly, when they first showed pictures of these clones, and I was like, that looks like Wolf. Like, whoa, Wolf made it out there. Like, I mean, I was freaking out about that. So seeing how that played out and the way that that did, he pulled the gun out immediately and stuff. I just thought that was great. And then, of course, Rex is like, you know, we had a slight weapons malfunction. Like, yeah, sure we did.
Yeah.
The weapon was the clone.
Yeah. A slight weapons malfunction. Exactly. And it's one of those things that I really appreciate the difference of the way the clones act. Because they, again, this goes back to the way the Clone Wars did this so well. But you've got the crazy one, you've got the paranoid one, and you've got the, by comparison, well-adjusted one. I mean, Captain Rex, who's this old fogey camping out on a reclaimed AT-T, which, by the way, was the coolest thing ever.
Yeah, it was.
Was the coolest thing, but that thing cannot be very comfortable to be riding around in.
So true.
Well, see, I was thinking...
Just the shocks and everything. I mean, that thing is bouncing around like crazy all the time.
Yeah.
It was so steampunk, too.
Well, and I was thinking, how much would fans have freaked out if Gregor and Rex's personalities would have been swapped? I mean, they did perfect by giving the clones they gave the right personalities. Because if Rex would have been the one that was all, like, addled and stuff, I think people would have just had a freak out. But it being Gregor, it makes sense. You know, the last we saw him, he was blown up. I believe Filoni had said that in the Rebels recon about their, you know, him being addle-minded and stuff. And, you know, there was just something fun about the character already, you know, when you saw him. And then knowing it was Gregor and knowing that and tying it together, it was like, oh, that's slick.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, but I've got to say, though, speaking of the clones, my favorite moment of the entire episode has to be it's when Ezra confronts Kanan about his mistrust of the clones. And Kanan is honest. He says his master was gunned down. And normally a Jedi thing to do would usually be withhold information. And I like the honesty between Ezra and Kanan at this point. It's a really touch point. Of honest moment between the two, but that's not my favorite part. My favorite part is when the kind of shadowy outline of Rex, he overhears part of the conversation and he says, we removed our, you know, the chips and everyone has a choice.
See, that's something I wanted to throw out to you, Riley, because when we were at Celebration Anaheim, Dave Filoni had mentioned that by taking that chip out and by not acting when Order 66 would happen, it would, in a sense, make Rex a traitor. And Rex, when we find out that Wolf gave away their position, Rex had mentioned that there were, you know, other locations that he never gave the Empire, which kind of led me to believe, okay, well, Rex has been around for a little bit after Order 66, so he couldn't have necessarily, you know, become a traitor right then in that moment and then got out. So it kind of had me in that question of, did the clones end up retiring? Did they stay with the Empire until a certain point? Or did they pull their chip and bail out and pull basically the Cal Scarada and get their clones out while we can? the lyric or the lines that Rex gives us kind of gave me the opposite impression. It kind of gave me more the impression that they went all the way till the Empire said, okay, we're pretty much done. You know, if you guys want to do some training, you can, but you're basically, you guys have been discharged.
Let's be, to be more specific, Pablo Hidalgo was right in the
Rebels Recon.
Rebels Recon talking about this very fact, and he's explicit about the fact that the clones, you know, some of them just went off to retirement. Other ones stayed around to be like Imperial instructors at different academies, and others just, you know, were abandoned. It's like a lost generation that he compared to Vietnam veterans.
Yeah.
And kind of the interesting thing here, too, is that Order 66 essentially put an end to the clones as well. Mm. Because Order 66 basically ended the civil war that was going on with the Separatists. And then, you know, the Empire was born out of that. And that's when, you know, I think it's pretty safe to assume that Palpatine started phasing the clones out and replacing them with stormtroopers.
Mm-hmm. Very quickly after Order 66, it seems.
So I would take then from Rex's line about not giving the Empire all those bases, he was either loosely meaning, you know, the Empire that was the Republic, or maybe he did it right at the beginning and then got out within that first month of the Empire switching
over. It's also possible that it just never came up. You know, he never had a reason to come. You know, he didn't necessarily willfully not tell them about the bases. It was possible that it was just information that never needed to be revealed.
Yeah.
You know, he did. It's like, oh yeah, I know where these bases are, but nobody's asking me about them, so I'm just not saying anything about it.
And I could see him doing that, especially with some of the things that happened in the last couple seasons of the Clone Wars. We're just going to keep this one tight, okay, guys?
Well, let's jump to the meat of the episode. Well, actually, this is kind of an aside because I'm realizing as I'm kind of going through the episode in order that really, as far as plot goes, the Jubba hunt was kind of a comedic aside and kind of funny, a little bit over the top, but not really part of the plot, part of the meat.
That's not necessarily true.
You don't think so? Because like for me, the big part was once the probe gets there and the Empire discovers where they are.
But the Jubba hunt was where the crew from the Ghost started to really get to know Wolf and Gregor and Rex.
Yeah,
that
you know you saw them working together. You saw some.
That's true.
Even though they're using Zeb as bait, and they didn't come out and say that they were using Zeb as bait, like that's where some trust started to build there. And right after the Jubba hunt, we see. You know, Rex has his moment with Ezra, talking to him about how well he performed and that, you know, he could be a good leader one day and stuff like that. So I think that while the Jubba hunt was fun and was a fun little homage to Jaws and stuff, it worked very much the same way it worked in Jaws. Because in Jaws, the scene with the barrels was the first time that Quinn and Brody and I'm forgetting the third guy's name right now, but it was really,
It was John.
Yeah. That was really the first time that the three of them had to work together because they were kind of at odds before that.
Well, absolutely. And Aris, that's probably my favorite part of Jaws, right? That scene right there.
Yeah.
Well, see, the other thing about it is like, you know, they call it a hunt, but in reality, it was a fishing trip. And whenever people go on fishing trips, it ends up being a bonding thing. I mean, I don't go on too many, but usually like my brother-in-law takes his kid and I'm like, hey, Gavin, you should go with him. It's a male bonding thing. I'm not going to go because I don't want to touch a worm, but go for it.
That's father. I can see that so clearly too.
I'm like, you know, I could kill a fish all day long, but catch and release, no, it's not so easy.
Even at the end of it, after Zeb has been – you know, ingested by the Jubba and come out and he's angry and stuff, he still like shakes it off and, you know, is slapping shoulders with Gregor and like, yeah, you know, it wasn't too bad. And like, I want to eat this guy after all and stuff. So it very much was the two teams bonding together.
did you hear that, Kanan? The biggest one they've ever found.
Yeah.
I rewound that scene when the monster came up a bit. I'm like, did Zeb just get eaten? I'm like, and then when it all stopped, I stopped, I paused it. And then of course, you know, I should always just let it play because they always answer my question within 30 seconds. But I was like, no way. He went down that thing's gullet. I'm all rewinding it, going back and forth. But even when all this is going on, they find ways to make all the cast members relevant. You know, Hera and Chopper, they're up working on the ship that's broke down. Sabine's working on the line for Rex that he's working on because it's like a fishing line, but it's also an energy binder. And he's like, hey, if that goes, you know, we lose your friend, we lose the catch, we lose it all. And yeah. It kind of ramped up the intensity. I mean, I knew they were going to lose Zeb, but for a moment there, I'm like, uh-oh, this can't end well.
And Eris, actually, I'm glad you brought that up because I think – not only was it a chance for the crew of the Ghost to get to know the clones, it's a chance for the audience who maybe haven't seen Clone Wars to get an idea of who the clones are and what they're all about.
And there's a large part of the audience who's watching Rebels who has not seen Clone Wars.
I'll be really interested when one of those fans that have never watched the Clone Wars, they've been watching Rebels, they watch the Lost Commanders, and then they discover the Clone Wars and getting their reaction after they've watched it from that process. I think that'll be a unique perspective, and I can't wait for, you know, to learn what that perspective looks like from the other fans. I think that's going to be a really cool moment. You know, I mean, that was one of the one things I've always got a kick out of with Riley, you know, with him being a prequel fan and stuff. His perspectives have opened up a world of different angles that I never thought about when watching the films. And I think that's one of the best things about our fandom is opening each other's eyes to the really cool things that we like.
Absolutely. And now we're going to have the opportunity to see that with The Force Awakens coming in theaters in 2 months.
This is the Star Wars Report podcast. Apology accepted, Captain Nita.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. It is the Star Wars Report podcast, beautifully transitioned because, like, literally, as you're hearing my voice and the podcast, there's mere seconds separating. But it is not but 24 hours later because I had a computer crash. And joining me once again, of course, right after the segment, but also the next day, that's the way the magic works. It's once again Mark and Erish. Hey, guys, thanks for swinging back on.
Don't lie to your listeners. The three of us have just been on Skype for 24 hours straight.
Yeah, we just...
The beginning of the best bromance in Star Wars fandom history.
We haven't left. Mark's been taking us piece by piece through his entire collection behind him. So it's taken nice. 24 hours.
I was going to say, that sounds about right. But I'm actually excited because we have a second to talk about before we wrap up the episode in the interim time. Right as this podcast is releasing, it's the day of the trailer release. So we'll be talking about that very soon in the next few days on a special edition of the Star Wars Report. But what we also just got a hold of, so we'll talk about it right before we close out the episode, is the official theatrical poster for Star Wars The Force Awakens. It has been released in the great build-up to the trailer release and ticket purchases tomorrow as we record this. So let's make the circle. I'll start with you, Mark. First impressions.
Oh, man, my first impressions are how glorious it looks. I like the symmetry of the look, but two things that jumped right out was the Death Star-looking object. It looks almost like it might be a planet with some machinery embedded in it. And then there's the fact that I don't see Luke anywhere on the poster, which isn't a problem, but it was something that jumped right out to me, and it got me very interested as to the whys. I am so excited about the whys. I mean, that's the one thing about most Star Wars anything, comic book, game, the whys of the story are what draw me in the most, and not seeing him there, I'm just curious as to how that's going to play out in the story.
I think it's. There is a point to the fact that we don't see Luke. Erish, conspicuous by his absence?
Possibly, we'll see.
Well, I mean, and that's really that, and the fact that were you hoping for Drew Struzan, Irish? What's your overall first impression?
I was just hoping to get a gorgeous looking poster, and that's what we got. There's so much going on in this that I love. I love the parallel of Kylo's saber blade and Rey's staff. I then love the juxtaposition of Finn and his lightsaber, and that they kind of create this pyramid effect with Rey at the top, and then, you know, Han and Leia and Chewie and the droids and Poe and everybody kind of underneath them. Just so many things work so well in this design.
Yes.
I was really, really excited when I saw this.
Yeah, that triangle look, Mark, is glorious. I like the stormtroopers make the bottom one there. One thing, though, that jumps out to me that I didn't realize until looking at it on a bigger blow-up is Leia's hair. I like how it's up top like that. It looks really cool. Like, I can't wait to see how that plays out.
There have been some memes going around about that one, too. first impressions, I was very impressed. I was kind of hoping for Drew Struzan just to... I love the theatrical posters for all six Star Wars films.
Have they announced who the artist was on this?
They have not announced officially the artist, and there has been no official comment on who did it. Now, Matt Martin on Twitter was saying that it wasn't Drew Struzan. That's not really like an official comment, other than, you know, he was pointing out the fact that it's, you know, it's not exactly his style. I would say it's his structure, though. Like, it's definitely the way the characters are positioned,
mm-hmm.
very much like I'm reminded of the Phantom Menace poster, where you have Qui-Gon kind of central at the top of the poster. In the same way here, you see Rey in that central position. And, you know, you think of the Episode 3 poster, you have Anakin in that kind of central upwards position, casting a shadow over the rest of the poster. So my big takeaway is, like, this is Rey front and center. If there's any question about it before, this is really showcasing her as the lead of the film.
Yeah, it's pretty much hinting that she's going to be our main character.
Yeah.
There's no Hux either, though. That's something else that jumps out. And then between BB and R2, there's one of those little scavenger aliens, which I find it odd that he's there, but yet Hux isn't there. I wonder if
scavenger aliens...
Are they scavenger? I they came in a pack with BB-8. I don't have that pack yet, but I can't remember what the names are.
Are these like the Jakku scavenger creatures?
That's what I was thinking. Okay. They were the ones that come in that two-pack with BB-8. That's the one I'm still hunting for.
Interesting.
I mean, my initial reaction was that might be our first look at Maz Kanata.
Hmm. There. Well, that's true.
That could be, too.
It is kind of generally that the shape that we've seen in leaked images. So maybe it is.
Yeah. That would be a cool first look.
I think it has to be a character with a name. They're not going to put a nameless scavenger alien on the poster.
Yeah.
Unless that scavenger alien plays a really big role in the story.
Yeah. No, I could definitely.
Or a Jar Jar like role, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe not saying personality, but just
careful.
You know, bringing along another little hopeless alien. The biggest thing, I wonder if that's Starkiller.
What is?
That base thing in the corner, I keep wondering if that's Starkiller base.
Yeah.
Or the planet that we see the new First Order on, where we see the troops all lined up, and it looks like it's the snowy planet. Because it looks planet-esque. I don't know. It's really weird. Like, it almost looks like a big chunk of the planet has been excavated, and they put, for lack of a better term, it looks like they took the Darksaber and implanted it into a planet almost. It's a very interesting look, and it makes me wonder, is that itself, what looks like the weapon, is that Starkiller base maybe? Or is the whole planet Starkiller base? I definitely get that vibe.
I didn't even think of
that. Menacing as heck.
Now that's really outside of the box. That would be fascinating design, but certainly nothing like we've ever seen before in Star Wars. The idea of like basically manipulating an entire planet and its atmosphere to create a weapon out of it.
The Death Star was pretty much the only thing out there that was able to destroy planets. And it was destroyed from the inside twice. So the best thing, I mean, if I was going to be designing a third thing of that, we just put it in the middle of a planet. You know, we got the only thing that's going to crack a planet. Ha ha! Well, foiled you this time, you rebels.
You rebels.
Yeah. So I mean, but other with the exception of the exception of Luke, we do see all the cast here, and I really do like the way the design of the overall poster is, and I like the fact that you see the First Order troopers. It's kind of divided with the blue scheme and the light side on the right, and the red scheme and the dark side on the left, although that doesn't fully paint the picture exactly because you still have the First Order troopers on either side. And you've
got Star Destroyers in there, yep. And TIE Fighters on the blue side, and then X-Wings on the red side.
But that kind of makes sense, though, because it's equal to who would be attacking. So on the First Order side, you've got the X-Wings flying in and blowing up stuff. And on the Rebellion side, the Resistance side, you've got the Star Destroyers and the TIE Fighters attacking them. But what I find interesting is the toy lines for Kylo Ren, where he talks about together we can take down the Jedi, the Last Jedi. And with Rey being on that side, I mean, we had talked in a previous episode about, you know, is he talking to Finn or is he talking to Rey? And I almost think that purposeful lineup of her on that side maybe means she might be that character that he tries to sway.
That would be interesting. That would be interesting. Well, so I mean, we're in the final hours. Really, the last heavy duty pieces of marketing for the film are happening now, and as of course as you're listening to this podcast, tickets will be or will shortly be available. The trailer will be out or will be out shortly. So it's definitely seeing this theatrical poster's a time when it really starts to feel real, and you really start to get the sense of us being on that final stretch. If this were the marathon, we're in that last mile, and that I could not be more excited. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. That puts this episode of the Star Wars Report podcast in the can. The way it's looking out, the way that all of this is turning out, guys, it's going to be interesting because this is episode 190 of the Star Wars Report podcast. I actually just released, as we're recording this, a little mini episode with initial reactions to the poster. But it's going to be right at 200 episodes when The Force Awakens hits. So I'm pretty excited about that. It works out well. But Arish, thanks so much for coming on. Where can folks find you?
You're catching me off guard.
Where can they hunt you down?
You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. I'm sorry, I don't know what I'm under. Like I said, you're catching me off guard.
Well, I'll tell you what, because I'm here for you, sir. And because if you're not following Arish, you should be. And he is at Darth_Duff. And you should definitely be doing so. And also, another shout out. If you're not listening to Geek Out Loud, you should be. And Arish is on there every month, yep, talking about the latest and greatest coming to theaters in the infamous Pass the Corn segment. So you should definitely be listening.
Pass the Corn, yeah. Steve Blossom and I talk movies and just ramble on about general geek stuff. So it's a good time.
Awesome.
You know, Arish, you need to get one of those R2-D2 popcorn buckets, the one where it's got the lid that you can do both. Be like, here, you get the small half.
Nice. There you go. Also, you can find myself and Mark. We are both on Twitter. It's at The Riley Guy for myself, at Illogical Rogue 2 for Mark. That's where you can find us tweeting all the time. Just posted a picture of myself. Went to Subway for lunch today and was sporting. It's that time of the year. I can in Georgia, we can finally wear hoodies, so I'm wearing the Imperial Stormtrooper hoodie that I just recently got, so I'm excited about that.
Speaking of exciting things at Subway, Riley, December, The Force Awakens is our kids' meal stuff.
Nice. Awesome. I remember when Star Wars Rebels came out Subway, too. I'm always so excited. Also, if you want to email us, you can do so at starwarsreport@gmail.com. I want to throw out a huge thank you to our supporters on Patreon. I just released in the feed, if you're listening to this, the last episode is a really short, quick reaction to the poster, and I just recorded that. Normally, that's the kind of thing I record a few minutes, or we'll do pre-shows or post-shows, and we put that up for you guys who support us as a way of thanking you. So if you want to do so, it's patreon.com/StarWarsReport. Find us on iTunes. It's just Star Wars Report. Leave us a review. Subscribe. It always helps get the word out about the show. And finally, make sure that you are subscribed to this here podcast on any podcatcher, because we're in the countdown to The Force Awakens. wait for a big announcement coming really soon on that. But that's going to put the wraps on this episode. Remember, many Bothans died to bring you this podcast.
That's pretty sad, man.
That's the way it goes, man. That's the way it goes.
At least in Legends, we're cloning them.
Had to get the Legends crack yet.
All right, let me just out the recorder here. Man.